The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I'm going to be reading to you from the New York Times and AAA Living Magazine. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, I want to remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. Today on Armchair Traveler, we're going to take a closer look at the safety and security of travel and travelers, and we're going to begin with an article by Stephanie Pearson. It's headlined, What Happened to the Woman in the Hotel Room Next Door? This is kind of a frightening article, to be honest, just to kind of give you a heads up. Her article appeared in the March 17, 2023 issue of the New York Times, and I'm going to begin with the subhead, which will give you a better idea of what we're going to be talking about. With their closed doors and transient nature, hotels can provide an environment for crimes like sex trafficking. An incident in the middle of the night prompts a writer to ask what is being done to prevent them. Now the story. The sound of rage woke me just before midnight. A man's voice in the adjacent room screamed, "Get out of my room!" with an obscenity added. His staccato fury was interspersed with heavy slamming noises and pleas of mercy from a woman's voice. I was frozen. What was happening, and what should I do? Then the room went silent. Around 2 a.m., I heard a man's voice erupting again, this time from the parking lot outside, where I could clearly see a man and a woman engaged in a heated argument. The man was forcefully holding onto the woman's arm as they walked out of view. This time, I called the front desk. "Should I call the police?" I asked. The attendant told me the hotel, a major brand just off an interstate, had its own security and that it would investigate and involve law enforcement if necessary. Soon I heard more thuds next door. They must have returned, followed by the sound of sobbing. Then a door slammed and there was silence. Early the next morning, as I checked out, the clerk assured me that the problem had been dealt with, but I could not stop thinking about what I had heard and seen. I didn't know if any crime had been committed, but the woman's cries pulled me down a rabbit hole of research into the prevalence of sexual violence and abuse in hotels and what is being done to stop it. Hotels, with their closed doors and transient nature, can offer a ripe environment for violence, whether it is domestic abuse, sexual assault, rape, or human trafficking. Take the case of the woman identified in court papers only as M.A., who in a lawsuit against hotels says she was sex trafficked out of multiple Days Inn by Wyndham Properties and a Super 8 by Wyndham in Central Ohio beginning in 2013 when she was a minor. In her civil claim against the hotels, a landmark case that is still making its way through the courts, her lawyers make this point. Traffickers are well aware of the seclusion and anonymity attendant with booking rooms with hotel chains without adequate training. They know it is unlikely that they will be disturbed. MA's lawyers also claim that at various hotels, the hotel staff ignored her and did nothing to prevent the ongoing and obvious suffering that she endured by being regularly trafficked for sex. What if the woman in the room next to mine had been going through the same thing? Or was she the victim of domestic violence? How prepared are hotels to deal with incidents of possible violence and to protect victims? Common and commonly ignored. There is no reliable data on the prevalence of sexual assault, rape, or domestic violence in hotels. These crimes are grossly underreported no matter where they occur. According to the Bureau of Justice Statistics, only 22% of rapes and sexual assaults and 50% of intimate partner violence were reported to police in 2021. Victims of sex trafficking frequently say their abuse took place in hotels. Of the 54 new federal criminal sex trafficking cases filed in 2021, where the location of the sex act was known, 80% took place at a hotel, according to the 2021 Federal Human Trafficking Report, the most recent tally, from the Human Trafficking Institute. That's a nonprofit that works with justice systems to more effectively prosecute traffickers. A 2018 study by Polaris, a leading U.S. anti-trafficking nonprofit, found that in the 10 years between 2007, when the National Human Trafficking Hotline was created, and 2017, the hotline received 3,596 reports of human trafficking involving a hotel or motel. In 80% of these cases, commercial sex acts were performed at a hotel. Of 127 trafficking survivors surveyed by Polaris, 94% said they had never received any assistance or expression of concern from the hotel staff, and that the staff either did not recognize the situation or did not acknowledge it as trafficking. According to the Human Trafficking Report, in federal criminal cases brought in 2021, 22 hotels were identified as locations where alleged sex trafficking took place, including some of the most familiar brands from the American roadside landscape: Motel 6, Quality Inn, Super 8 Motels, Red Roof Inn, Marriott, Knights Inn, Holiday Inn, Hawthorne Suites, Days Inn, Comfort Inn, and Baymont Inn. The pandemic brought new challenges to fighting sex trafficking. There are now touchless, faceless ways to enter many hotels, such as key code entry systems. Compounding the issue is an industry-wide staffing shortage. In a survey published in 2023, report by the American Hotel and Lodging Association, the largest hotel industry group in the United States, 79% of hotels said their property was short-staffed, and 22% identified that issue as severe. The Polaris study notes that trafficking is not limited to budget hotels, but that places where the staff is busy and distracted may be preferred. Each hotel is different, but fewer people mean there are potentially fewer eyes on what is happening, said Yvonne Chen, the director of private sector engagement at a group called ECPAT, ECPAT-USA, and she says a nonprofit trying to eradicate commercial sexual exploitation of children, she added. In light of COVID, we've seen vulnerabilities increased for everyone, and vulnerabilities that are what traffickers target. Trying to hold hotels accountable. Federal efforts to shut down trafficking and prosecute offenders have been driven by the U.S. Trafficking Victims Protection Act, passed in 2000. There have been two important changes to the act in relation to hotels' responsibility to protect victims. In 2003, victims gained the right to file civil lawsuits against their traffickers in federal court, and in 2008, the act was expanded to penalize those knowingly who benefit financially from participating in trafficking. That enabled victims to bring civil suits against third parties, like hotels. In 2021, 83 new civil suits were filed in federal courts by people who say they were trafficked. Hotels were the respondents in 17 of those suits. They follow MA's precedent-setting suit, filed in 2019. MA versus Wyndham Hotel and Resorts, which is still in litigation, marked the first time a judge allowed a suit against hotel companies to move forward because the plaintiff alleged sufficient facts to show that the staff should have known trafficking was happening, including payments in cash, housekeeping being asked to replace towels on a frequent basis, and signs of sexual activity in the trash, such as lubricants and condom wrappers. Our lawsuits seek top-down accountability, not just suing the local property owner, said Kimberly Adams, a lawyer at Levin Papatanio Rafferty, one of the firms representing MA. Because the problem of human trafficking in the hotel industry is nationwide, advocates for those most vulnerable people are urging an industry-wide effort to address the problem, including by the national brands like Wyndham. In an email, a spokeswoman for Wyndham said that the company does not comment on pending litigation, but she added, "We condemn human trafficking in any form." She said Wyndham works with industry organizations to combat trafficking and provides training for employees and franchisees in the United States. How hotels are facing the issue. In recent years, the hotel industry has begun to focus on combating sexual assault and harassment. In 2018, the AHLA created a program called Five Star Promise, in which the members' hotels voluntarily pledge to adopt policies and training to prevent incidents against guests and staff. In 2019, it started the No Room for Trafficking program, which provides employee education and training through a free 30-minute online program in 17 different languages produced by Marriott International with ECPAT USA and Polaris. Hotel companies can choose to have their employees use the program. As human beings, we are better than this, said Chip Rogers, the chief executive at AHLA, which is the American Hotel and Lodging Association, speaking of sex trafficking. If you are a hotelier and knowingly involved, then you should pay whatever penalty and then some, he said in an interview. One issue with stopping trafficking, Mr. Rogers says, is that people are somewhat clueless as to what are the particular signs. Typical clues are if a person seems distressed, hostile or confused, or flees or becomes frozen when engaged. If they are with a companion, that person may exert physical control or may not allow the person to speak. Experts emphasize identifying a potential victim's behavior rather than their age, race, gender, economic status, or sexual orientation. The media often portrays blue-eyed blonde girls as sex trafficking victims, said Mar Bretman, the founder and chief executive of Business Ending Slavery and Trafficking, a nonprofit group. But she said victims are disproportionately recruited from minority groups. Additionally, a significant number of males are trafficked for sex, as well as people who are transgender. Trafficking also takes place across a wide economic and geographic spectrum. The Lodging Association's goal is to have all the roughly 2.1 million industry employees take the No Room for Trafficking training, though there is no target date. Since the end of 2022, more than 800,000 people have been trained. A paper on the moral and ethical issues that sex trafficking raises for hotels, published last year in the journal Religions, draws a straight line between the industry's efforts to combat these crimes and the ability of victims to sue hotels. While multiple factors may have contributed to these changes, the authors write, it is likely that the onset of civil action against the hospitality industry is promoting behavioral change. In an email, an AHLA spokesman said, the hotel industry is steadfastly committed to trafficking prevention and has been a leader in this area for years. In the AHLA, of course, hotel employees watch a series of videos that define human trafficking and the risk it poses to hotels. They're also taught to recognize indicators of sex trafficking and how to react to it. The course provides insights like the traffickers threaten victims with severe consequences if they speak to police to help employees understand victims' behavior. But it remains unclear how effective the training is. There's no way to measure the impact of training on decreasing trafficking. There's simply not enough research and data, said Ms. Bretman at Best. In 2016, Connecticut was the first state to pass legislation requiring hotel and motel staff statewide to be trained in recognizing human trafficking. 11 states, plus the cities of Baltimore and Houston, now require it. State Representative Jillian Gilchrist, who serves West Hartford, was instrumental in passing the legislation. When I asked if the statute had decreased the incidence of abuse in hotels, she told me that the weakness of our law is that there's no teeth in it. A rare victory. Critics of the hotel industry said that its training and other programs do not go far enough to protect women from other kinds of violence, including rape and sexual assault. Hotel security shortfalls are much more common than travelers would imagine, said Ed Blizzard, a Houston lawyer who represents a number of women who have been sexually assaulted in hotels. There are rare instances when hotels are found legally accountable for sexual violence on their premises. In 2021, Kathleen Ann Dawson won a $44 million verdict against Hilton Management LLC and a man named Larry Joe Clowers, after she said he sexually assaulted her at the Hilton America's Hotel in Houston. The incident occurred in 2017 when Ms. Dawson was staying at the hotel for a business conference. According to the lawsuit, a passerby called 911 after finding Ms. Dawson, who was unconscious, lying on the sidewalk. Mr. Clowers, who was also attending the conference and whose pants were unzipped, was on top of her. When police and hotel security officers arrived, Mr. Clowers told him, "She's with me." Hotel staff failed to check Ms. Dawson's ID, which was in a purse that Mr. Clowers was holding, to determine if she had a room registered in her own name, according to the suit. Instead, hotel security provided a wheelchair for the unconscious Ms. Dawson. Police officers, led by hotel security, then wheeled Ms. Dawson to Mr. Clowers' hotel room, where hotel security unlocked the door to place Ms. Dawson in the room. The next morning, Ms. Dawson woke up naked with his hands inside me, and he was assaulting me, she said in an interview. When criminal prosecution fell through, Ms. Dawson sued. The jury placed 90% of the fault on Hilton Management, 10% on Mr. Clowers, and none on Ms. Dawson. I understand mistakes are made, she said, but in my case, the mistakes were huge, really, really big, huge mistakes. All the hotel had to do was its job. At the time of the verdict, Hilton issued a statement saying that at Hilton, safety and security of our guest is a top priority, and we do not condone violence of any kind. The company and Miss Dawson settled for an undisclosed amount. Mr. Clowers appealed. He and Miss Dawson settled for an undisclosed amount after mediation. Kent Landers, a corporate spokesman, said the company had no additional comment. What should guests do? Distressed for days by what I had witnessed at the hotel, I emailed a corporate address explaining the situation, then reached out again to the hotel's corporate communications office to see what representatives there could tell me. At each level, I got the same response. Hotel employees are trained to identify signs of abuse and respond if the victims need help. The local police told me that no one at the hotel had called them that night. Those unsatisfying answers left me with one question. What should I have done? I don't know if there's a more right, perfect answer, said Ms. Chen of ECPAT USA. I think it's more like what is the best thing to do at that point. Ms. Brepman of Best said not to knock on the door. We never want bystanders to insert themselves into a situation where there could be an abuser or a trafficker present. Instead, she suggested, if the perpetrator is nowhere in the vicinity, reaching out directly to the victim and asking, hey, are you okay? Or passing on the number for the trafficking hotline or the National Domestic Violence Hotline. If it's a violent situation, call law enforcement. If a child is involved, call the front desk and law enforcement simultaneously, she said. Noel Gomez, co-founder of the Seattle-based Organization for Prostitution Survivors, was trafficked for 15 years, starting at the age of 15. I was the perfect victim, young, vulnerable, with no money and no family help, she said. Since she helped found the group in 2012, she estimates she's worked with thousands of mostly girls and women, helping fund and execute exit strategies. It's easy to get in, it's hard to get out, she said. I've heard my same story a million times. Ms. Gomez was trafficked mainly in California, Arizona, Las Vegas, and Seattle, living out of motels. She believes that many staff members knew what was happening. Some hotels are taking cuts, she says. I've done sexual favors in exchange for rooms. Ms. Gomez said her trafficker once beat her severely in a motel, nearly killing her. I had to have CT scans on my brain because he beat me so bad in a motel room in San Diego and nobody called the police. When I asked her what I should have done at the hotel that night, she had a simple answer. You should have absolutely called the police, she said. Calling 911 would have helped me. It's very serious issues there in that particular report. Now we have another article that involves single parents traveling with children. Headline, Flying Alone with Your Kids, Make Sure You Have Proof of Your Relationship. This is written by Deborah Kamen and appeared in the November 16, 2022 issue of the New York Times. And we're going to again begin with the subhead. Recent incidents at airports suggest that carrying your child's birth certificate, passport, or other documents will help mitigate alarming and often time-consuming incidents in security. Now the story. Shamia Hooks was so focused on her carry-on full of pumped breast milk that at first she didn't understand what the agent from the Transportation Security Administration was saying. Ms. Hooks, 32, was at the San Diego International Airport, about to fly alone for the first time with her son Caleb, then 5 months old. At the security checkpoint, the agent looked at Ms. Hooks, who is black, and then down at Caleb, who is half Korean and looked nothing like her. Where's his dad? The agent asked. Caleb has two moms, Ms. Hooks, who adopted him, and her wife, Coretta Lewis, who gave birth to him. At that point, the adoption paperwork had not been finalized, and Ms. Hooks realized she wasn't carrying any legal documentation to prove her relationship to her son. I was a new mom, and I had this Asian-looking baby with me, said Ms. Hooks, who runs a family travel site alongside Ms. Lewis. She believes that she was flagged because she was a single parent traveling alone because her child is of a different race. I was afraid they were going to take my son away from me. Parents traveling with children are often focused on remembering the tickets and piles of gear like diapers and toys that they fail to pack one critical item, proof of their relationship to their children. It's an oversight, family law attorneys say, that can lead to significant delays at airports and border crossings, particularly in cases of divorce and non-traditional family structures, or when children don't share their parents' last names. Parents are not required by law to carry such documents when they fly. July, but in 2020, the Department of Homeland Security made combating child trafficking a high priority, and in March, it started new anti-trafficking training programs in tandem with the Department of Transportation, specifically for airline industry employees. There have also been several high-profile incidents of travelers being detained by the police, including a mother traveling with her biracial daughter in Denver and a black woman flying with her 4-year-old white sister in Dallas, both of whom were wrongly suspected of human trafficking. Such cases have prompted family law attorneys to issue calls for caution. On social media and online travel forums, many parents who have traveled alone with their children have shared stories of TSA agents directly questioning their young children in order to establish the relationship, particularly when the parent does not share the child's skin color or last name. I always tell clients to carry with them the child's birth certificate and any passport in the child's name, Josh Northam, a family law attorney in Dallas, said. When custody battles are afoot, Mr. Northam added, parents should also have the consent travel form often required by existing court orders. In Ms. Hook's case, the agent called over a colleague, and both of them asked her to explain her relationship to the child. She was then asked to pull up photos on her phone to prove she was his mother. After she showed them several pictures taken at home with Caleb and her wife, they let her pass. These days, whenever Ms. Hooks or Ms. Lewis flies with Caleb, who is now 3, they each carry a packet filled with paperwork, including his adoption forms, his birth certificate, and many family photos. Most TSA agents are not law enforcement officials, and they do not have the power to arrest people. But they do have the power to detain travelers and call in the airport police, who are on the site and can make arrests. TSA workers, agents with the Department of Homeland Security and the Federal Aviation Administration, and employees of every major airline all receive mandatory training on kidnapping and child trafficking, and for good reason. The U.S. State Department estimates that 24.9 million people are being trafficked worldwide, and children are believed to comprise nearly one-third of the victims, according to the U.N. Children's Fund, or UNICEF. Thousands of TSA officers also undergo behavior detection training so they can learn how to identify signs of stress or fear among passengers and then flag them for further screening. At security checkpoints, the TSA has modified screening procedures designed for children who appear to be 12 or younger. These include allowing younger children to leave their shoes and light jackets on during screening, being careful not to separate them from their parents or guardians. But some parents say their children are also being directly questioned. It's not easy for a 5-year-old to answer a stranger's question, so I was a little nervous, said Catherine Collins, 35, a personal finance author and single mother who was stopped by the TSA last year while flying out of Detroit with her twins, a boy and a girl. Miss Collins' last name is different from her children's. He asked the twins, "Who is this?" And he pointed to me, she said of the agent. And when my son said, "That's Mommy," the agent asked him, "What's your mommy's first name?" Her son correctly said his mother's name was Catherine, and the three were allowed to pass. But Miss Offord says she had been shaken by the incident. I was thinking, gosh, what if they just didn't respond, or it was a child who only knows his mother as Mommy? The TSA said in a statement that for security reasons it could not outline the specific behaviors that officers are trained to look for, adding that the agency's protocol calls for local law enforcement to be alerted whenever there is speculation of suspicious behavior. Officers are looking for behaviors that together indicate that a particular passenger should be scrutinized more closely, the agency added. In cases where parents are divorcing or in a custody dispute, the need to carry documentation is even more urgent, said Andrew Zoshin, a family law attorney and adjunct professor at Case Western Reserve University School of Law. That's because parental custody doesn't automatically guarantee the right to get on the airplane with their children. There's a difference between custody rights and the rights of possession, Mr. Zoshin said. Just because you have custody rights doesn't mean you have the right to do anything you want with a child. A parent who travels with a child without the consent of the other parent can, in extreme cases, be accused of kidnapping. You can go to jail if you're accused and convicted of having kidnapped your own child, Mr. Zoshin said. Why would you take the chance without permission of the other parent? The issues of transporting children often come up too late. people don't think about it until the last minute or after there's a problem. It's better, he said, to think about it well in advance and carry copies of all custody agreements with a notarization seal for good measure, as well as a signed letter from other parents granting consent for granting consent for travel. This thinking applies to the international trips as well as domestic travel across state lines. And even when there are no custody battles at play, Mr. Zashin said, any parent traveling with children should employ better safe than sorry attitude. He recommends traveling with a child's birth certificate and passport, as well as a handful of documents that only a parent would have, such as a school report card or health records, which can go a long way in diffusing suspicion at a security checkpoint. You don't need to have a suitcase full of stuff, he said, but you should have a little bag with everything you could possibly need and then hope you don't need any of it. Good advice. Well, we're going to wind up today's Armchair Traveler by looking at things to do and places to see. This is from the due date section of the March-April 2023 issue of AAA Living. We'll start with April 14th and 16th, the Cape Fear Garden Club Azalea Garden Tour. You can take a self-guided tour in Wilmington of more than a dozen gardens bursting with azaleas and other flowers, shrubs, and trees. The dazzling blooms at Arley Gardens are an annual highlight, and check out CapeFearGardenClub.org for more information. CapeFearGardenClub.org. Then April 21st to the 23rd, we have the Cider, Wine, and Dine Weekend. You can indulge your taste buds in the vineyards and orchards of the Blue Ridge Mountains. Events include picnics, tastings, tours, dinners, live music, and yoga. The weekend includes free and ticketed events. Visit HendersonvilleNC.org/cider-wine-dine-weekend. It's where you get more information online. That address again, visit the Hendersonville NC. North Carolina, or nc.org/cider-wine-dine-weekend. Now, April 27th through the 30th, we have Merlefest, Wilkesboro's Merlefest, the long-running celebration of traditional plus music, including Americana, folk, old-time, and bluegrass music. Returns to the Wilkes County College with 4 days of concerts, Wilkes Community College, I should say. And this year's lineup includes the Avett Brothers, Maren Morris, Black Opry Review, Sam Bushman, and Jerry Douglas, among others. Learn more at merlefest.org, M-E-R-L-E-F-E-S-T, merlefest.org. Now, on April 28th through the 30th, we have the North Carolina Tribute Festival to the King. Elvis Presley impersonators, tribute artists, and cover bands converge on Lexington, North Carolina, to celebrate the King at North Carolina's first and only Elvis Tribute Festival. There are competitions for the best tribute artist and plenty of chances to sing along and dance with Elvis tunes. There you go, Elvis fans. NC Tribute Festival to the King.com is where you find more information online. NC Tribute Festival to the King, all one word, .com. Then it's early part of May, May 6th and 7th, we have the Burlington Carousel Festival. Celebrate the return of the hand-carved Denzel Carousel to Burlington City Park with music, food, and carousel rides. Wow, that sounds like fun. Now, this is a historic carousel and underwent a total refurbishment of the ornate carvings, paint, and mechanical elements, as well as the addition of a chariot and a ramp that are accessible per the Americans with Disabilities Act guidelines. And now it's ready for riders again. Check it out at BurlingtonNC.gov. That's BurlingtonNC.gov. Look for Burlington Carousel Festival. And my friends, that's going to bring us to the end of today's episode of Armchair Traveler. We hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be with us again next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you the content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Now, Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That address again, ncreadingservice.org. If you have comments or questions, you may address them to 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.